G'day and welcome to Macca's Podcast. I love the scope of our program, anything and everything. If you want to get in touch with Australia, this is the place to do it. Settle back and join the Australian phone box. See you on the road.
Get on with it, Macca.
I will. Good morning and welcome wherever you are. It's lovely to have your company. It's nice to be back, I think. It's a bit strange. I never usually take long breaks, and I don't like them. I don't like taking long breaks because I don't know what to do with myself. There's gardening to do and all that sort of stuff, but you get sick of gardening after a while. You know, I just like to plant a plant and watch it grow. I'm not one who grows tomatoes and sprays them and does all that sort of stuff. I just want to bung in a plant and, oh, there it's going well and that sort of stuff. You need to do, and you get out, I'm telling you, you get out of the rhythm of doing what you do. You come, you know, you just come to a little thing like this and you just, you're in the groove and you just get in the groove. And when you haven't been doing it for a while, it's all strange, but it's nice to be back and it's nice to hear your voices and lots of lovely things this morning. I didn't do much. I went to Ballina once and, mucked around, danced on New Year's Eve, which was really, I met the mayor in Ballina, and I was just sitting there and she came over and asked me to dance. And what do you do? You know, I mean, many's the time that, what's gone there? Is that gone? Yeah, my little thing. Many's the time that I've gone and asked a girl for a dance. Remember dances? People sit around and you'd go and ask for a dance and they'd just look at you and she'd, I remember this girl at the Rivoli in Hurstville once and I went and said, because that's what you do, you're supposed to go to it, this is a dance, so I suppose. I didn't really want to, but you. So you cruise up and you ask them for a dance, and she looked up at me and with this disdainful look, and and I thought, all right. And it's, as I said to Rex Ellison, as Rex said to me, it's the, you know, then there's the long, lonely walk back across the dance floor. But it was her miss out, as Kenny Fletcher would have said, it's her miss out. That's what I say. 1300 700 222, wherever you are. Lots of things. Played a couple of little fundraisers with the band, with the Gumboat Band. It was great. We had Paul Panicki and it was just the brass and it was good. It was wonderful and we did Great Balls of Fire and stuff. The thing about the band that was playing on New Year's Eve, and I was just sitting there, we're just watching them really. I didn't, and I was asked to dance, so we had a dance with the mayor and that was good. I didn't do it. I said, look, I don't dip. Anyway, but the band, when it came to 12 o'clock, Kel, they didn't do Rock Around the Clock. I mean, that's what you do. We used to play all the time at New Year's Eve. The Guy Mere Rex or wherever we were, or a Hell's Angels do or whatever, New Year's Eve, we always played at 12 o'clock. Da-dun, dun. Da-dun, dun. 1, 2, 3 o'clock. And everyone go nuts, you know, rock. And away you went. And you always played Rock Around the Clock at 12 o'clock. But this band didn't. I don't know what they played. I can't remember. But it was good fun. Yeah. And it's nice to have your company. 1300 700 222. Missives from all over the place. This is from Irv. Irv Ambler. He's in Maine in the US. And if you've looked at any of the weather reports, Irv says, welcome back, Cotter. Remember that? Welcome back. Anyway, he's got welcome back in big letters. They're shouting. It's been a long 6 weeks. He says, you're usually back on air between the second and third Sunday in January. How come you took off 6 weeks? Well, bureaucracy, I think. Missed you. I have to tell you about our winter this year. Ever since December the 1st, we've been ensconced in the dread Arctic Oscillation. That's the DAO, I suppose, which drags super cold Arctic air down from the North Pole. This month especially has been brutal. Isn't that a great word, brutal? With cold, icy Arctic air and snow, snow, snow. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. The last 2 weeks have seen record-breaking temperatures, especially at night in mostly minus temperatures. Just last week, one night was the lowest I've seen in Maine, with a low of minus 26 degrees centigrade. Minus 26, that's about minus 50, isn't it, Fahrenheit or something, or something ridiculous. Now, if that doesn't frost your cookies, says Irv, bake your biscuits. I don't know what would. We had a major snowstorm last weekend, which brought us 16 inches. Isn't it nice to see the old terms? 16 inches of extremely light and fluffy large flakes. Right now we have very deep snow cover on the ground, 3 feet. Maybe today's show will warm us all up. Welcome back, Kel and Ian, says Irv and Darcelia in frozen North Maine, north of Maine. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because we've had heat wave here, but that's exactly what happens, isn't it? Just having a drink of water, because, again, I'm not used to talking. I'm the silent type, usually at home, sometimes. But, yeah, heat waves around the place. I've been up to Bathurst. I went to something called the Carnival of Cups the other day, and it was very hot, but it was dry all around there. The dams are dry, kangaroos all over the place. And we've been talking to people in South Australia, and we will do that in the all over news coming up. And also, we have the top 10 songs for last year. They'll be played after 9 o'clock, and you'll enjoy that. Interesting. We'll also announce our Australian all over the year, I think. I was going to ring her and tell her, but we have lost a number, in her books. See, we have to move so many times, and you just keep getting blown up, and you get things in order, and then you move it and you put it in boxes, and there's stuff all over the place, because we attract a whole lot of stuff here, because we get lots of mail, and I keep a lot of it because it's wonderful stuff, and you get bits and pieces, and you put it in. And after a while, it just becomes impossible. You just got to try and use your brain and sort it in your head, and hopefully you get it right. And I spend most of my time here, and so does Lee Kelly, looking for stuff, because where's that? Because we want to find something all the time. And anyway, look, we'll talk to you. Our number's 1300 700 222, wherever you are, and let's go for it. G'day, this is Macca.
Hello.
Yep.
Oh, it's Ian here.
Ian Francis. How are you, Ian? Dr. Ian Francis.
Yeah. Very well, thank you, yeah. I'm the eye doctor, one of them.
Yep.
One of the thousands. I just want to tell you about the trauma conference I went to in Rizutsu, Japan.
Oh, when was this, Ian?
It started on the 10th of January.
Uh-huh.
And it was for about a week. And it was a ski resort in Hokkaido Island called Rizutsu. Very nice. And there was a conference and a bit of skiing thrown in as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was talking to the audience who are from all around the world, but mainly from Victoria, I think.
Yeah.
And I said, look, in Sydney we've had 4 shark attacks and they're pretty gruesome. And people get bitten on the legs mainly.
Yeah.
And I said, why don't the paramedics have artery forceps. Artery forceps are like a sophisticated pair of pliers, and you put them across an artery in a vein and clamp them, and the bleeding shuts down. And they didn't think that was a very good idea because it'd be hard to find which was an artery, which was a vein. Anyway, one of the characters in the audience, a bit of a wit, said, look, he was at a beach recently and he saw a shark bite kit. He thought, I'd better have a look. So he opened the shark bite kit, and there was a tourniquet, which is not unreasonable. There was a phone number, which is a good idea. And there was a space blanket. Everybody cracked up because the last thing you need is a space blanket. You need to stop the bleeding. Uh-huh. I thought that was pretty funny, actually, in a terrible, tragic way.
Yeah.
So that's my story for you.
Yeah, that's all right. Is it called an artery clamp, is it? Or
an artery forceps.
Forceps.
So it's just like a pair of pliers.
Yeah.
It's got a grip, and across the bit that closes, there's a serrated piece, maybe, you know, centimetre or 3 centimetres long, and you put the artery into the artery between it and just shut it down, and it immediately stops the bleeding without a tourniquet.
And I suppose, and that's blood loss, I suppose, is the big thing with the shark bite, isn't it?
Well, it is really. I mean, this boy who was bitten on both legs, Nico Antic in Vaucluse, he jumped off a thing called Jump Rock at Shark Beach, which is ironic.
Yeah.
He was bitten on, I just think, maybe one or both legs. But the blood loss is a huge event. And if you can't get it stopped immediately, pretty much, then people, they just die.
Yeah.
And they looked after him very well for a week or two at Sydney Toolands, and they couldn't save him, unfortunately.
No, terrible thing, terrible thing. See, the other thing about this, Ian, is when I grew up in a little suburb in Sydney called Oatley West, and we didn't live far from the Georges River. And we had a little swimming beach down there where people used to go, especially on Sunday morning when the tide was in and they had races and it was a nice community time. And I think they still probably do it. But we're always taught you don't swim outside the enclosure. And the whole, the bête noire of the Georges River when I was a kid was grey nurse sharks. Now that's turned out to be wrong, and grey nurses are sedentary little sharks that don't attack people usually, a bit like Kieran Kelly's dusky whalers. He sees his dusky whalers and he swims over them when he's out at Manly. But you never swam in the Georges River, like outside, because it was just stupid and you'd hear dogs being taken and things like that. You don't do that. And then some 5 years ago, I went out in Sydney Harbour and we were on a boat with people. And so they pulled the boat up in the, you know, somewhere in the harbour, and everybody just jumps off and starts swimming around. And I thought, you don't do that. And I don't know if kids or anyone's told that, but you're inviting trouble if you swim in areas where it's not enclosed. You're just inviting trouble, and everybody should. We just would never do that. And that was just part of the folklore around the place. You don't swim in the river because there's sharks in there, and you'll end up, you know. So I don't know if that still exists, but you just wouldn't swim in the harbour, and you wouldn't swim anywhere outside where you're not protected from sharks and things.
Remember years ago I went to Quarantine Bay, you know, just over North Head, and people would park their boats there, their yachts or their motorboats, and just swim to shore. It was only about 40 metres, but that's an ideal place to get eaten by a shark.
Well, exactly. Now, this was a trauma conference, is that right?
Yeah, it was really well done. It was all sorts of trauma, chest trauma, head trauma, teeth trauma, leg trauma, and I brought up the sharks.
Uh-huh. And you're an eye person, aren't you, really?
Yeah, well, I thought I might go next year. Not that I'm a terrible skier, really. I do grip runs fairly well. Fairly well.
Yeah.
It depends who you ask. But I thought I might give a talk on eye trauma.
Right.
And they haven't had that for a while, so I'd be happy to do that.
This is what? Accidents with the eye where you get hit in the eye or something like that? Is that what you're...
Yeah, like hit by a squash ball. For instance, my brother was playing squash. He thought he'd finished a point, turned around to face the back wall and walk back. His opponent hit the ball and hit him in the eye, lost the eye. He's got a blind eye now that looks rather brown. No one ever notices it because his eyes are half shut. But that's one example. But if you have a major trauma to the eye where you rupture the eye from, a car accident, you probably won't survive. You'll be dead. Because an injury that would rupture your eye in a car accident would probably kill you, so you wouldn't see that patient.
Uh-huh. And lots of people from all around the world were at this conference in Japan?
Yeah, mainly from Melbourne. I mean, they've got to get out of Melbourne, haven't they? And
that's not nice. You had to anywhere in Australia this last summer at the moment with you've got to get out. Look at South Australia. They've copped it. We've got a lovely little piece in All Over News coming up about the weather. It's been in South Australia and been dry everywhere. So I think sometimes when I think of summer, I think, well, you've got to get out of here. And I look longingly at Hobart where it's 16 or 18 degrees or something like that. And I think, wow, wouldn't that be nice to have a good night's sleep?
Well, I'm lucky I can use aircon if I need to, but I've got plenty of air. I would live at DY and there's plenty of air coming in.
Well, Ian, you'll have to come in. We'll talk eyes again sometime. But thanks for that report. That's very interesting.
Yep. Okay, nice to talk to you. And see you later.
Good on you, mate. Bye. That's Dr. Ian Francis. G'day, this is Macca.
Hello there.
Yeah? Yep.
Are you talking to Bill now?
I don't know. Is that Bill there?
Okay. Well, this is Bill here.
I'm talking to Bill then, obviously.
I was listening to your lovely story about standing on the Nullarbor and looking at the stars at night.
Yep.
And I'm just camped beside the Brisbane River near the mouth of it in a fishing boat trailer park. I spent the night here looking at the stars. Anyway, we've driven across the Nullarbor about 27 times, and I was on one of the first expeditions in 1963-64, organised by the Sydney University Speleological Society, hashtag SUS, and they found and discovered through aerial photography and much driving around in the bush on motorbikes and cars, we found Mulla Malang, the longest cave in Australia. And we started surveying it and got to the 1 mile peg, and then we got to a rock pile at the end. We were stuck there, and then later on a friend phoned me and they'd found the a continuation. And I went there in 1965 on my way to Perth, and we were the first, the three of us were the first people to the end of Mulla Malang.
Mulla Malang.
Mulla Malang's the longest cave in Australia. At the time, it's been surpassed by other caves now, like in Tasmania. But we found a spider there. I've got the only photograph of the blind spider and a cockroach. And it's on Wikipedia, a picture of that spider with its very scrambled cobweb. But, we've been there many times. My family with four children, we've driven across the Nullarbor many times because my wife's parents were over there. And so we've stood on the Nullarbor and looking at the stars at night. And my girlfriend at the time, who became my wife, who just died 3 months ago, we had 60 years together travelling and spent many times travelling across the Nullarbor. And our first Christmas was at Twilight Cove, south of Cockabitty. And we had our first Christmas there down in the sand dunes on the beach. And I drove my VW Beetle along the beach there. You can look it up, hashtag CLM174. And you can see the photographs of our campsite and driving along the sand dunes and the beach at Twilight Cove.
Bill Little, that's a lovely story. I always found that you gals and guys in the Speleological Society were not crackpots, but they were in a nice way. They're sort of, you're always beetling off somewhere and doing something, not outrageous, but yes, the
Mulla Malang was a wonderful cave, and some other local people had gone in there, and they were afraid of getting lost. And we knew our way very well through that cave. It was just one long passage. You couldn't actually get lost at all. You might stumble around a rock pile for a few minutes trying to find the best way. But they unrolled the length of string in the cave so they could follow this length of string all
Good
the
idea.
Way back.
Good idea,
and later
I reckon.
On, my brother wound it up, and we had 2 miles of string in a large ball. And we later used it to fly a kite high up in the air over Sydney, and then it disappeared into the bush in Ku-ring-gai Chase.
Now, Bill, I used to have a correspondent here who's passed away since, but she and her husband used to write me letters, and they'd go exploring because they lived in South Australia and they were great explorers, a bit like you, and they told me about the caves, and I didn't know about this as 30 years ago, 40 years ago they'd tell me about the caves on the Nullarbor, which are quite amazing, aren't they? And some of them would be fairly dangerous and all over the place.
They have the longest dives at Cockabitty Cave. We went in there numbers of times, and it was just one lake. But divers in Australia, they dived it, and they went about 10 kilometres, and there are a number of rock piles, so you can surface. You're underwater all the time, and then you surface on a rock pile, and you can camp, spend the night there, and reload your tanks.
Is that scary?
No, it's so huge. Well, it's scary to me, the diving. I'm not a diver, but the caves, we've been caving for years, so we've been in tiny little squeezes where you dig like a wombat, and you push the dirt behind you, and you dig the dirt in front of you, and you push the dirt behind you. But in Mulla Malang, it's just a walking, it's mountaineering underground. So you're just climbing up and down rock piles and walking around beautiful sand dunes. Anyway, you can look up N30. It's called N37. Is the number. They number all the caves.
I should have joined the SUS.
You should have, yeah.
When I was at uni, but I was too busy doing other things.
We even had expeditions up to the top of the Harbour Bridge. We had three or four trips up to the top of the Harbour Bridge. So we had a hashtag SUS bridge climb.
Was that legal at that time?
No, they had all these handholds. They had these spikes and barbed wire, and the spikes were very good handholds. So you just go around the spikes and up the bridge, and they've got ladders and steps.
Oh, the things you could do back in those days, Bill. But now they charge you. Well, I don't know what they charge you, but
well, it was a $50 fine for climbing the bridge in those days, which is cheaper than what you pay now. Now it's a couple of $100 to do a legal trip.
Billy, so you've been standing on the Nullarbor. Have you, the words of the song go, have you ever stood at night on the Nullarbor?
It's
an amazing thing. Billy, what's it like there this morning?
It's beautiful. The sun's out. Everybody's arriving in their boats to go fishing, and I camped in this place where they all load their boats and leave their boats and go fishing, and I'm on the south side of the Brisbane River. I just drove out here towards the end of the river to find a free camp spot, and I spoke to a nice fisherman. They've got sandy beaches beside the river on the south side, and he caught his first crab ever in years of fishing, and that was the only thing he caught that day anyway.
All right. Good on you, Billy. Great to talk to you, mate. Keep in touch.
Okay, will do.
And you live in Canberra, right?
Yeah, I live in Canberra, that's right. I'm on my way back there in the next couple of weeks, and then we're going camping down at Jarvis Bay at Kay's Green Patch.
I'll come with you sometime. Good on you, Bill. Got to fly.
Okay, cheers.
See ya. What an amazing fella. I used to remember the Speleological Society, because there were friends of mine said, come on, we're going there, we're going. But I was not the outdoor type. Remember the song? G'day, this is Macca.
Hi there, this is Jenny.
Hi, Jenny.
How are you?
Yeah, good.
Well, I'm ringing from Wonthaggi in Victoria, and thus we've got a sprinkle of rain, but I'm here to talk about temperatures. My husband and I, careered 18 Rotary Exchange students to LA Airport to put on to various flights from Alaska to Mexico. We did a little trip. We'd left Wonthaggi at plus 41 Celsius. And, a bit hot, but off we went. Air-conditioned plane, great. But we went to the Grand Canyon and thinking, the desert. Snow up to our knees. But then 4 days later, we arrived in a place called Thompson in Manitoba, Canada, the home of our previous student we had hosted. And we had gone from 41 plus to overnight 41 minus.
That's life on the planet Earth, Jen. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yes, do you know? Look, I loved it. I'd live there. But with the cold, I'm not a summer person. But I learned cross-country ski at minus 20 degrees Celsius.
And you're in Wonthaggi now, are you?
Yeah, I'm in Wonthaggi. Have you ever been here?
I've been through Wonthaggi. I haven't stopped, but I've meant to go there, Jen, sometime. What's it like there? You've had a hot...
What you should do is visit the state coal mine.
Yeah.
There's so much history. I won't put you through all that now. You're busy. But the state coal mine, it has got a huge history to be further explored.
All right, I'll look it up and I'll keep in touch. I might see you in Wonthaggi. Jen, we've got your number, haven't we?
You do?
Yeah.
Just ask for Mad Jenny.
Okay. Nice to talk to you.
Okay, mate. Take care.
See you. Bye. There you go. If you're listening at Soapy Bore or Mosquito Bore, g'day. It's in the Utopia Homelands. This is Macca. I'm back, I think. G'day, this is Macca.
Hello, Macca.
Yeah.
Hello, it's Dr. Vanessa Perotta calling from Sydney.
Hi, Doctor.
And a big welcome back to you.
Mm.
I've just got something for your listeners to be aware of, if that's okay.
Mm.
Because at the moment, the majority of the humpback whales are down in Antarctica.
Mm.
But yesterday off Tathra, there was an entangled humpback whale observed by Terry Dixon off Tathra in New South Wales. We're just wondering what this whale is doing, but unfortunately it is entangled. So if your listeners are listening and you're down on the South Coast, can you please report an entangled whale to either New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife Service or Orca as well?
This is off Tathra, is it, Vanessa?
Yes, it was heading north. And so for your listeners who aren't familiar with the humpback whale migration, the majority are down in the Southern Ocean feeding at this time of year. So this whale may have remained in Australian waters because of its entanglement, and it's pretty bad. I don't know what it's entangled in, but it's essentially wrapped right around its body, and its pectoral flippers, its arms, are completely wrapped up. So it's not in a good state, but we need to help this whale.
All right. Well, you've put it out there, and I'm sure they'll get right on it, Vanessa.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
You too.
Good on you. Bye. This is the All Over News. Indeed, this is the All Over News, and I believe it's the fifth year. I can't believe it. We've been doing the All Over News. Anyway, this is the technology report, we'll call it. A range of letters here about technology. Firstly, from Peter McNeely, says, on the subject of technology, I was a photographer till digital technology wiped out my business in 3 months. I tried to raise some reaction in anyone about the obliteration of photographic talent, but got absolutely no response. I now fix things to make a living. So my take on AI is get ready for the obliteration of yet another human skill set. Income streams for music and art are now due to be confined to history. AI can produce Aboriginal art at the push of a button, and you can't live off streaming income. Wonder what the next human skill will be that gets obliterated by technology. They reckon 30% of entry-level jobs will be gone in 5 years. Glad I'm at the end of my working life, too old to spend all my working days in front of a screen. I have no children, and I'm glad I won't be leaving anyone behind when I go. On a brighter note, the Jack Russell has found something in the shed. He's barking mad. A huge gum has dropped a massive branch just next to the office, and stormbirds have been calling for days, says Peter from Wallaby Gully. Thanks, Pete. And while we're talking about technology and AI, this from Edwina Harvey. Hi, Macca and crew. Hi, crew. I heard the song AI put together for you this morning and have been following the discussions about AI creativity over the past few weeks. I liked the song about the trotter too. That was about Leap to Fame, wasn't it? Do you remember a few decades ago how computers, etc., were going to do all the menial tasks we humans have to do and give us more creative time to paint and make music, write poetry, stories, even maybe attend the Adelaide Writers' Festival? Duh. Anyway, Edwina says, looks like they've leapfrogged us and we're chasing careers as food delivery drivers now. Something's not right here. And on the same tack, Daryl says, re the AI development influence in the music industry. I started photography with a box brownie, still have it, developing film and making photographs by exposing negatives in the sun and hand processing in a dark room under the house in the early 80s. I went to College of Art, Seven Hills, Brisbane, 4 years, chemistry, light exposure, processing, composition, camera operation, etc. I got a diploma of art in applied photography. You have to have knowledge and skills not only to take an image but to process films and print images. I later went back to college to get qualified in digital imaging. You still have to have knowledge and skill to produce and edit images using Photoshop. Now people aim a phone in the general direction to capture an image, press a button, and AI fixes anything, adjusts lighting, composition, etc. No knowledge or skill involved. Well, musicians, welcome to the new world. Such is life in an automated world, says Daryl. Thank you, Daryl. And on a brighter note, Graham Manuel says, you made a very profound statement. No, I never make profound statements. About EVs and how you dislike them. I think disliked is the word I said. I'm thinking this may be due to naivety. Well, that could be right, Pete, because I am naive. I bought an EV in January this year, and it's by far the best vehicle that either my wife or I have driven. One pedal driving is the best. A few quick stats. It has an 88 kilowatt battery that allows it to travel 520 k's between charges. It roughly uses 17 kilowatt hours per 100 k's. I have a 32 amp charger that charges at 6.8 kilowatts per hour. I've changed my electricity tariff to time use and pay 7.8 cents between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. During the 5 hours of cheap charging, I can put in 34 kilowatt hours or 200 k's of travel for $2.65. This equates to $1.32 per 100 k's, or less than 1 litre of petrol per 100 k's of travel. The EV that I bought has V2L, that is vehicle to load, which means it has a 16-amp, 240-volt power outlet. It is basically a 3.8 kVA generator, so it's one of the few vehicles that you'll make money on while you own it. With the time-of-use power tariff, it also means that I pay 56 cents per kilowatt-hour between 4 and 9 p.m. I have put a generator switch in my meter box, so come 4 p.m, I plug the external car power into the generator switch and the car is now powering the house, except the cooktop oven. By doing this, my power bill has dropped from $10 a day to $3.80 a day. So over the year, I'm saving $2,260 with no $2,000 fuel bill. Performance-wise, the EV smashes the Mini Cooper Pocket Rocket that my wife used to have, as well as my SS Commodore Ute. I don't own an EV for an environmental reason, as I still bounce around in a V8 Land Cruiser. The only reason I bought the EV was the vehicle-to-load feature, and it is paying off, says Graham. Thank you, Graham. Not wanting to rain on your EV parade, Graham, but motoring correspondent for the Australian newspaper, John Connolly, wrote, and he wrote this last year, 5 reasons not to buy an EV yet. 1, they depreciate quickly. 2, the charging network is not really that. It's not really a network. 3, batteries are the $20,000 elephant in the garage. 4, government rebates gone. And 5, buy today and in 2 years, because change is coming so quickly, you'll own a dinosaur, probably worth less than a second-hand Corolla. It seems not everybody is in love with the electric vehicle. Judah says, I tried to call last week, but a busy day. They're all busy days, Jude. I wanted to tell you a good news story about my school, Coolum Primary. We wanted to show students how they could help others, and we got involved with the Salvos and the Vinnies. We asked the students to bring in a grocery item we could pass on. We've 1,000 students and they were amazing and showed a real sense of kindness and generosity to others. We filled 3 cars, a ute and a small van. Nice to do something for someone else. Thanks for keeping us connected, Judith. Good on you and good on Coolum Primary. And from Ted Reese in WA, this relates to a news item on Channel 7 in Perth. A truck had crashed into the outer Perth suburb of Baskerville. Channel 7 crew attended the scene and interviewed a resident of Baskerville. The reporter who prepared the story for the evening news obviously used voice-to-text, which is a form of AI, I believe. The voice-to-text program converted Baskerville resident to basketball resident. A photo is attached. Thank you, Ted. And finally from Lara Hamilton, she says, Macca, in October this year, it was the 41st anniversary of the release of the Terminator movie. Perhaps that was an insight into our world today. The machines are taking over, including robotics. The birth of the Internet of Things, kids who are losing the craft of penmanship, and technology running the world, including Starlink. Says Lara, in Mildura, where the skies are blue on the mighty Murray 3 years on from our major flood. And still on technology, I went to the races yesterday. Well, not really the races. I went to the Carnival Cups, which are pacing events which are held right round the state of New South Wales, like in Albury and Yugowra and Bathurst. And I went to Bathurst yesterday. And it's the last place you'd think, you know, when you're surrounded by horses, you know, a horse is a horse is a horse and eats hay and stuff like that. But they had this mobile centre of excellence there, which is like a flight simulator, except it's like a trotting simulator. So it gives you the experience of you're driving a pacer around the track, you know, and they go about 40 k's an hour, and it bumps and grinds and pulls and pushes. It's very exciting, like being in a flight simulator is. No chance of crashing, but it's a great experience. Morris Logue's the bloke. Come and meet him. Talking to Morris Logue. How are you, Morris?
Good, Ian. And yourself?
Good. I've just had a go in the, well, I call it a flight simulator, but it's a horse simulator, like what it would feel like if you were in the gig of a pacer or a trotter.
Yeah, it's a multi-purpose device. We use it for mentoring junior drivers in the finer arts of driving. It's got sensors all over it, as you would know. And it even locks its jaws if you try to pull it up too fast, and replicates that. Mainly we take it to careers markets and events like this just to showcase harness racing.
And also you do it with returned veterans?
That's right. We've been working with an organisation called Horse Aid, and they use equine therapy to help with returned veterans and also first responders, and we've been working with them as well.
Now, what's your background? Where do you fit in?
I was a former jockey, and I had a career in racing for 20 years, and then I moved into education and welfare and found myself at harness racing 5 years ago, trying to help them develop pathways into the industry and formalise trainings. That's where I fit in.
Others of these around Australia, these sort of simulators?
Well, in harness, this is the first one. Mm-hmm. Thoroughbreds have had them for close to 20 years, but theirs are all mainly fixed, so they're in a place and you come to the simulator. Whereas ours, we take it to the community.
All right, well, good luck with that. It reminds me of one of those flight simulators, but there's not quite as many buttons.
Most definitely. Mm. Thank you for taking the time.
This is the All Over News, and back to reality. For a while, away from technology, and over the years, I've realised and I appreciate the vast reservoir of knowledge and observance that exists out there amongst the common man and woman in Australia. And it's wonderful. Have a listen to this. Cop this from Mick from Hallett. You'll find Hallett in the map. It's in South Australia. He says, "G'day, Macca. As I write, and you know, of course, this has been, again, the summer of land of droughts and flooding rains around Australia, and bushfires, of course. We forgot to add those." Mick says, "G'day, Macca. As I write, the cool wind change is making its way up the Clare Valley, and not a moment too soon, I'll tell you. 16 days of over 100. That's just about breaking point. How the early settlers managed is one of life's mysteries. It began in October, really. The rain tap was turned off. The blue gums all flowered in a bone-dry, calm November. And when the winds came in December, dropped their stamens in huge clouds that piled up against the fences like eucalyptus-scented yellow snow. If there was a use for it, Macca, I'd be rich. December was bone-dry, but pretty mild, only a few days above 100. We got away with that one. All the bottle brushes flowered like no tomorrow and hung on for weeks. January hit hard. The 40s crept in, and it's been that way all month. 40, 45, 48. Nights of mid-30s now. Yesterday was 48, no different to 50 really, and that's in the shade. It's 47 in the kitchen, and the fridge is in a battle with the tin roof, and it's level pegging. The lettuce and tomatoes are frozen, but the libations are cold. Everything looks tired and sad now. Birds only move to come in and drink. Thousands of sheep are perishing. The water is 60 degrees, and when they drink, they do not move after. They sit down, and those behind pile up on them. People have started going ratty. Short fuses. Best to stay at home. Most of the trucks have stopped. All the frozen freight has. It's too hot for them on the road. But there are a lot more than usual before this heat wave hit. But another week and there would be shortages. The previous six summers were cooler than Melbourne was. Life in the bush. Can't beat it, Macca. Kind regards, Mick from Hallett." And ladies and gentlemen, there's your weather report. This has been the All Over News. MaccaTracks@gmail.com. G'day, this is Macca.
Hello, Macca. Welcome back. Lovely to have you back on air.
Thank you. Your name is?
Rob from Tellygarupna. I'm part of the Landcare group here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very sad to report that last week we had a very disappointing incident. Over the years, we've looked after Station Park, where the station used to be on the Goulburn Valley Highway.
Uh-huh.
So one of our Landcare members, Trish, was there last week watering the plants in the heat.
Mm.
And the sign that we had erected there that originally came from the Tellygarupna pub, which was rescued after the pub burnt down in about 2014.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember the phone call we had about that. Yeah. Anyway, go on. Yep.
Anyhow, this big steel pipe with a round advertising on it about Carlton Draft was rescued by one of the local communities, the Dusty, and we had it repainted and repurposed and erected at Station Park. So it looked rather outstanding, saying Tellygarupna Station Park with the railway crossing signs on it. Blow me down if during the night some, what do you call them?
Yeah, we know what you call them. We can make our own arrangements for that one, yeah, but go on.
Yeah. So here it was bolted into the ground and guess what? It's gone missing. Absolutely. All we've got left is the bolts and the steel threads that the bolts are on.
Well, it could have been some idiot who wants to, you know, did have a lot of steel and stuff. Would it be worth some money that way? But I think the word Talagarupna, that doesn't exist anywhere else in the world. What a mighty name, Talagarupna.
And it was such a wonderful sign. You know, the local sign writer did it for us. It was a community grant and it just stood out. And it was just, you know, part of the highway. It was just to the entrance of Station Park. And here we are trying to keep the little natives alive. And somebody goes and pinches. It's about a bit under 20 foot high. So, you know, you needed some, what will you say, strength to get it.
Exactly.
I don't know. It breaks your heart, to be honest, Mecca.
I know. Well, it's like the lady just before Christmas. Remember they had their tree and some bastard burnt it down the night before? So the whole community came in and redid the tree. But, I mean, and we've got one of our little themes. And some mugs pinched the old brass plaque, you know. But you hear people, you know, the bells, lovely bells. I don't know. You just got to smile, Rob, and good will come of this, Rob. I'm quite sure.
The good would be good if I feel like writing a sign. Please return no questions asked. They'll drop it off.
They'll pinch that sign too. it's pathetic, isn't it, Rob? But I mean, that's life, isn't it? It could have been stolen for its value, or it could have been stolen. Fancy some muggle have it in their bar, you know. Got this Talagarupna. It's a great name, isn't it, Rob? It's a great name.
It is, isn't it? It gets shortened to Tally quite often. I must admit, we usually refer to ourselves as Tally.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
All right, Rob. You got a dry time, a fiery time around your way.
Very, very dry, but wonderful cool change this morning. Yes, wonderful.
Just the simplest things in life are just, you just breathe a sigh of release. I sat out in the afternoon up in Bathurst the other day. I went to the Carnival of Cups and the sun had gone down. It had been about 40 degrees, but the sun had gone and it was just beautiful afternoon. It was nearly dark and it was, the simple things in life are the best, Rob.
Yes, well, it's overcast here today, that's for sure, but there is a lovely breeze and it's made a big difference, I can assure you.
Whoever it is, bring the sign back, please. No questions asked.
That's right.
See ya.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
That's a pleasure. Bye. Susie is in Olsenville. Good morning, Susie.
Good morning, Macca, and welcome back.
Thank you.
Angela did an absolutely amazing job when you were away. Of course, we all love Angela on the Northern Rivers.
Good on you. Thank you. What's on your mind, Susan?
I'm following up from the Tally Corps. I have a small business in Istanbul, a dance studio, and I've, like everybody, had a break-in, and I've now been waiting 32 days for the police to come. Unfortunately, there's still no police in Istanbul. And we have one policeman covering Istanbul, Wallingbar, Korakai, Wardell, Woodburn and Evans Head. And they're just so busy. As you know, everyone now knows somebody who's been affected by break-in, car theft, vandalism, stealing. It just seems to be the new norm now that's how it is.
An epidemic on the Northern Rivers. Is that the story, Susie?
Well, I think if it's lots of post-flood, and even the police said to me the other day, why don't you ring up the local members, which of course I rang up Janelle Saffin, who's the Minister for Small Business and Disaster Relief, and she's going to do some lobbying for me, and I also rang Tamara Smith. But yeah, it's the new norm, and what to do when the police are just almost burnt out from dealing with the same people who are always seem to be doing these little crimes in the tiny village of Istanbul, which I know you've visited and love.
Yep. I remember when I won't talk about it, but I was in Lismore and, somebody pinched some money out of my car when I was setting up to do a program up there. But I don't know. What do you do about it, Susie? What do you do? I mean, I don't know if there's a solution to any of this sort of stuff. There must be. I mean, in other In other environments, in other communities, in other countries, there would be solutions to problems like this, but we don't seem to be able to, like many of the problems that we're faced with in Australia, we don't seem to have the gumption to tackle them. I don't know what you do. Firstly, you'd probably want to my lead's coming out. It's hard when you get back to work first time. The first thing you'd probably want to do is put some more police on the duty, wouldn't you? That's the first thing. But it's the same on the roads. I see very few police cars on the road, and you see a lot of terrible behaviour on the roads, but you don't see many police on the road. And I don't know. Do we need more police? I don't know what the solutions to any of these problems are, Susie. But you must be. What's it? 30? That's nearly a month since you've been knocked off.
That's nearly a month, and I've waited every day, and I've rang the police every day as well, which is, you know, becoming, oh, my gosh, I've got to ring them. Should I stay here, go home? And I'm not paying out on the police. I know the police know exactly who those people are, and that's what I don't understand. Even the police have said to me, now you've got to take a civil suit against those people because we know who they are. I just sometimes, when the police have even said to me, what do you want us to do about it? And I realise how hard it is.
And then you'll probably get to court.
Their job.
Then you'll probably get to court and the magistrate or whoever, depending what you get. And see, there doesn't seem to be anyone wants to do anything about it. It's just it's part of the deal and you just got to cop it sweet. Yeah, because I'm thinking here while I'm talking to you, what's the good of the police coming? They say, yeah, you've been robbed. What are they going to do?
I want the police to come because this is my third break-in from these boys. I'm now about to replace another. I'm not going to replace the windows because if you could imagine even replacing them three times. Mm. There's even been... like one time the police were going to come, there was an unfortunate vigilante attack on the house where these boys live and the police couldn't come, and then the police tell you, don't take matters into your own hands, we'll come and help you. So I'm just waiting for them to come.
Mm.
But unfortunately, as you just said, the police have said, what do you want us to do about it? Mm. And what can you answer them? What can you say? Oh, I thought that was your job to help and support victims. So there's not a lot of support for victims. I feel it is like the new disaster in Australia, and the police have said to me as well, having a business in a town where there's no police is a problem.
Yeah.
I've got the boys on camera, so have all the other victims, but what can we do?
Yeah, well, there's another job for the Premier, Mr. Minns. There's lots of things for Mr. Minns to do that doesn't seem to be being done, but that's just my point of view. We don't usually talk about things like this, but I mean, I think it's widespread around Australia too. All sorts of problems with crime that just goes and doesn't get punished because we don't punish crime because it's, you know, petty crime, but it's not petty crime. And it just destroys the sense of community that you have in your town of Alstonville or whatever. It'd be in other towns too and around the place too, so I'm quite sure.
Very true, Macca, and it is type of soul destroying in a way to keep going through this process with no outcome. I feel for all victims who are suffering, and there's many of us here in the Northern Rivers who are. We need you to come and save us, Macca. When are you going to come back to Alstonville?
I'm the first.
To a Rob Hurst, you?
He's
from the Northern Rivers too.
Yes, poor Robbie's passed away. Susie, good on you. Nice to talk to you. Good luck.
Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Bye. Claire's in Gosford. Good morning, Claire.
Morning, Macca. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm not bad.
I'm a Dubbo girl. I'm the head coach of the Western Region Academy of Sport, where we throw together teams, or they come and trial. But we've got kids from Dubbo, Lithgow, Bathurst, Orange that we put together with head coaches who come over. We're at a tournament currently at the moment where the kids are, you know, got to travel 5 hours to come to play basketball. That's a pretty frequent occurrence, especially kids from Dubbo. We don't have a stadium in Dubbo. Well, we do, Macca, but it's two courts, pretty dilapidated. 10 years ago, we had the state government come out and do a massive, you know, let's get the media, the sports people in. We'll do a soil turn and we're going to build you a 6-court stadium. We're still waiting for that.
I'm not laughing, but yeah.
Oh, you are. I am too, mate. It's absolutely disgraceful.
It's the name of the nature of the beast. So where are you this morning?
So I'm actually at Gosford at the moment. I'm doing the 18 girls and we play at 10:40, but we've got 6 teams here, ranging from 12-year-olds up to 17-year-olds.
Wow, and basketball for girls, is that as popular as netball? Are lots of girls playing basketball now? Or?
Yeah, we do. We've got great girls, but the concern is, you know, we just like the cities. We don't have the facilities. So we've got 2 courts in Dubbo where we can't even grow our sport. So we've just had 2 young kids from Dubbo selected in the New South Wales country team, Jazzy Gordon and Cohen Weir, for just for that alone. You know, they've got to travel 6 to 7 hours to train on weekends. And the commitment by them and their parents is amazing.
Yeah, I'll say, and commitments by all parents when you look at sport around the place, because we often get calls here from parents on their way to so-and-so playing football or all sorts of things around the place, and parents are driving great distances. But I suppose in lots of ways, there's a blowback because the parents often like it, actually.
Absolutely, we do.
But it is a big, when you look back, I suppose, after 10 or 20 years, you look back and think of the miles and the miles and the miles that you did for netball or basketball or for hockey or whatever it was. But it's good for kids. I think sport's great for kids.
Oh, it is. And, you know, you don't count the dollars because if you do, I think you'd have a coronary. But shout out to my husband who's home with my 3 children. I've got one who's a bit old to play and 2 youngins who aren't ready to play yet. And his support lets me do all this. So, I'm pretty lucky. It's my passion. I love it. And I just love seeing kids out west succeed.
Good on you, Claire. Keep up the good work. I'll bump you sometime.
Yeah, come to Dubbo, mate. Build me a stadium. I'd love it.
All right. I'll try. See ya.
Thanks, Macca. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Jenny's in Eden. Morning, Jenny.
Good morning, Ian, from a lovely cool Eden, a lovely cool southerly breeze with some very welcome rain.
Oh, hasn't it been dry? Isn't it lovely? As I just said to Susie, it's, or was it Robin Telegarupna? It's something simple like a little fall of rain, especially when it's been dry. It's been dry.
Oh, very, very, and warm. I know Central Australia's been absolutely boiling,
but
it's been very hot here too with humidity as well, and the risk of fires is always ever present.
I know.
And we welcome the rain. It's just fabulous.
What's happening in Eden?
We have a rather unusual visitor at present. We had the Young Endeavour pop in yesterday, but she's just off Jervis Bay on her way back to Sydney, I imagine. But we have the cruise ship Anthem of the Seas.
Anthem of the Seas.
350 metres of her.
Wow.
And a capacity of 4,900 passengers at times.
They'd be singing some anthems on there. My 4,000, God help me.
Yeah, but she does not have that company at present. The passengers are without their crews. She's got a little problem with her propulsion or whatever, but she's still got the crew on board, of course.
And where are the passengers in Eden hanging around? Are they?
The cruise that was scheduled for this time has been cancelled.
Oh, right.
But when you've got it makes you realise how tight these schedules are. There's just no room for her in Sydney to sit alongside to undergo repairs. You know, the berths in Sydney are ever-changing, and she couldn't sit for 4 or 5 days at a berth in Sydney. So she's come down here to have the repairs done.
Wow.
And so we have 1,500 visitors.
That's what I thought.
The crew are still on board. Yeah. God love them. And I really feel really very happy for them. Those people work extremely hard.
Did you say 1,500 crew?
Yes, I did.
God help me. And 4,000 passengers.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel. It's a floating city.
Absolutely. When she does, she's been in a couple of times and it's bigger than our town, you know. But it's amazing. But right now she's hopefully having whatever the problem is sorted, with people from all over the world have come to quickly right whatever's wrong. But I feel very pleased for these crew members who many of them are, from overseas, Filipinos or whatever, and they haven't got the cabins on the ship that have got balconies and looking out to sea. They're down in cabins in the bowels of the thing somewhere, and they're working hard. I mean, if you just think, when that ship gets into Sydney, the 4,900 passengers get off and another 4,900 get on by 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And these people, apart from looking after everybody every day while they're at sea, they've got to swap over and clean the entire ship and re-provision it and goodness knows what.
Jenny, just let me understand this. So the Anthem of the Seas is in Eden. Yep. The passengers are where?
Well, whoever was to be on the cruise at this time, the cruise has been cancelled.
Right, so there's no passengers.
Are no passengers.
Right, so but there's 1,500 crew and people have come from all over the world to fix up corks in the holes and whatever's wrong, yep.
Yeah, so the working crew are having some well-earned rest, and we see them just having a lovely walk around town and going, buy something in the supermarket or sit down and have a pizza and a cup of coffee, which they don't get much chance to do while they're
so working. Then this will go off to back up to Sydney and pick up some passengers, is that the story?
On the next schedule, hopefully, if she gets all sorted this week.
There you go. There must be a lot of dough in cruises, because if you can pay 1,500 crew, my God, and that's without the captain, who's, the captain always gets more money, I think.
Well, the boss. I don't think he'd be there if he got the same as the housemaid, I tell you. God love him.
All right.
Anyway, it's just something different for us this week. We've got a great big cruise ship sitting in our port.
Different for us too. Different for us. Just to think about it. It's the great Australian dream now. Everybody goes cruising, don't they, except me. You'll never get me on a cruise ship, Jen. You'll never get me on a cruise ship.
And I do think of those people out in Central, and my daughter's in Broken Hill, as you might remember, and they've had a lovely cool change and a good drop of rain after a big dust storm last night out there.
Yeah.
So they're a bit relieved out in the centre too. But we've got, by the look of the radar, we've got a nice bit of rain here for a bit.
Good on you, Jen. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We found this lovely house just a little way from town.
Just a little way.
We bought a beachside unit.
Oh.
We're travelling right around on
the park.
It's our home among the gum trees. And if you've got the time, I'll tell you why I live where I live.
I don't mean maybe.
I'll tell you why I live where I live.
Have you got a tribe? Maybe you need a tribe. Maybe you haven't got a tribe. This is from Michael Hsu. Listen on. I've been listening, Ian, since I was very small. About the time that Carol Bayer-Sager sang I'm Moving Out Today, I think, or Peter Allen sang The More I See You. It's a long time to think about why I live where I live. Life was challenging when I was young. I've lived in lots of places. Gladstone, Boyne Island, Home Hill, Mossman, Atherton, Mareeba, Cairns, Melrose, that's in Scotland, and Blackheath, and probably 10 or 12 houses in Cairns. They were all grand, but one must find their tribe in life. I'm from four tribes I see now, Gladstone, Home Hill, Cairns and Melbourne. Getting to Melbourne was like getting on Farlap and riding it for years. Melbourne's still a place where a young person can achieve things beyond their dreams, and not necessarily of the money variety, if they can just be themselves. An old bloke once told me that the harder you work, the luckier you get. I've been very lucky. Especially if you can find your tribe more than once. I live in Black Rock. It's not black or rocky. It is near the water. It's pretty, but most places are if you love them. My friends and my family all live around here. We have a last Thursday of the month card game that has continued every month of every year except December since 1998. The bet is capped at $2, and it always ends at midnight. A punter once arrived as invitee with $500 in small notes. He didn't say much when told about the bet limit and never came again. You see, why I live where I live is not about the weather or the views. I might say it's about the sound of rain here. It's more often very soft in the winter or the mornings in spring, when the air is fresh and the bay is still cool for a bracing swim, and a snapper might just swim by. But really it's about my children and my friends. My life changed a few years ago. I wasn't ready for it. Then I met Caroline, online of all things. We are both 67s. She has lived 500 metres away for 10 years and would walk past my place on the way to her son's primary school each day. I rented a house with my beloved friends every Christmas in Blairgowrie from 98 to 2003. It was next to her parents' place and she'd been there a few metres away, both of us single, in our 30s. We have the same books, very odd books, poetry books. We have enjoyed so much hearing you read Kate Llewellyn. I have Fig at the Gate and she has Harbour, both bought ages ago. They're books by Kate Llewellyn. It's as if we have been looking for each other and everything before was just the path. So I live where I live because this is where my children live and this is where my friends live and this is where she lives. I cannot believe my good fortune. This is why I live where I live now. Love the show, says Michael Shue and Caro from Black Rock. Still while we're down south from Lynette Roberts, she says, I love the name of the area we call home, Fern Tree Gully. Although the name conjures up a rural hideaway, it is in fact an outer suburb of Melbourne. We've called this place home for almost 22 years, but my husband resided in another part of the gully, as many call it, for a number of years before we met. I remember Fern Tree Gully from my early life when it was a small bush town. City folk would venture to the area for a day out in the country. Nowadays, if we travel a few k's from our house, we find ourselves in the midst of the beautiful Dandenong Ranges. At a stretch, we can just see the top of the mountains from our property, although as we drive around the local streets, the mountains loom, covered in dense, native forests. The mountains appear blue from a distance, hence the popular name Blue Dandenongs. These ranges are home to a number of small townships and villages, and on most weekends and holidays, they are inundated with visitors who travel from all over to experience the many shops, walking tracks, eating places, picnic grounds, and accommodation venues, along with the natural beauty of the mountain scenery. The whole area exudes nature, blended with peaceful beauty at its best. One of the attractions for many visitors are the gigantic eucalypts, which tower majestically above the enormous tree ferns, and an abundance of other flora, mostly native. In autumn, visitors to the hills can witness the magnificent hues of the season as the deciduous European trees begin to change colour. Getting back to our humble abode, our street is a typical suburban one. Since we arrived here, my husband has transformed what was rather a messy jungle into a lush garden with many large shrubs and attractive beds with smaller growth. Our plants are a mixture of Australian natives amongst introduced ones. We are blessed to have a local nursery run by volunteers. During the warmer months, we delight in sitting on our large back veranda and taking in this beauty. So relaxing. Lynette, I wonder if you sit out in the veranda in this winter that we've had. Finally, she says, we have friendly neighbours in our street and we've also made many friends in the various groups we've joined in our local area. Shopping centres are close by, public transport, so we both agree, all in all, this is our ideal place for us to live out our lives. And that's why I live where I live, says Lynette Roberts. If you'd like to write to Why I Live Where I Live, I'd love to hear it. Post Office Box 9994, Sydney 2001, or you can send us an email or whatever. That's why I live where I live for this week. Oh, and our motoring correspondent Corey's on the line. Morning, Corey.
Good morning, mate. It's Corey from Piermont in Canberra.
And what are you doing in Canberra? Tell us.
Nothing political. It's the Festival of Speed.
The Festival of Speed. What? Tell me about that. What's that?
So I guess it's like a mini Goodwood Festival. It started, I think, 3 years ago. But it's like old cars that don't have automatic stop starts that run around a little tiny track that people get to experience not so much the speed, I guess, but a lot of the sound.
And where's that held?
The Thoroughbred Park.
The Thoroughbred Park.
So a different sort of horsepower.
Yeah, and it's got a racetrack. And what's the distance around the track?
It's very small.
Yeah.
But it's very interactive. So like you're actually quite close. There's really only an Armco fence and a bit of a barrier. So you're only a couple of meters from the actual car going past you. And it's quite cool. Like it gives a lot of the older generation to bring out the older generation cars and give them a bit of a demonstration lap, and cars you don't really see from, like, there's an MG from the 1930s here.
From the 1930s. So what sort of cars apart from that? Like MGs, MGAs, MGBs, those sort of things, or?
Yeah, but all the way through to late model performance cars. You've got the drift boys that come out with their wild drift cars and they put on a bit of a show for everyone, and it's a bit of everything, really.
Yeah, and you like that. I know you were in the shitbox rally some years ago, which was a great thing. But down there, what sort of speeds do they get up to? Or is it more just a have a look at this?
Some people, I mean, it's not a very long circuit. You might be able to hit 100 and something k's on your on the straight. Yeah. It's not like a Bathurst where you can really go for it.
Mm.
But it's more of just a demonstration lap, and if you put it in the wall, well, that's up to you.
And is this in Canberra again? Is this sort of follow on from Summer Nats? I mean, that's Canberra's known really for cars, isn't it? And
one time a year, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, you know, around Summer Nats. That was
at the beginning of the year, yeah. So this is the three weeks later. Yesterday it was really affected by the heat. It was like 43 here yesterday. And when your friend's $800,000 Lamborghini looks like it's overheating, not a great thing. Whereas today now it's only, I don't know, 22 degrees overcast and quite pleasant.
Well, it's and a big crowd there, or?
The line to get in is quite long, yes. I think they'll do very well today crowd-wise because the temperatures yesterday really affected everybody, whereas I think today they'll probably get a lot of walk-ins, and the queue was already out to the main road when I walked in. So
uh-huh.
I think they'll do very well today, and if you're in Canberra, it's probably the best thing to come and see today.
And none of those cars will have ignitions that cars that stop at the stoplights, will they?
Be right on that one.
The engine will keep running, and probably some of those cars would have cassettes in them.
I reckon there's a few here that might have something, whatever, was probably a record player, mate.
Corey, good on you, mate. Enjoy it. Sounds like a great day for people who love the speed and love the cars. Cars. No electric cars there?
Well, you won't hear them.
No, that's the trouble.
It'll just sound like the wind went past.
Yes, it's just the trouble. It's like those bikes that come whizzing past you, for God's sake. Ah, yep. They should have a...
No, if you like noise and speed and a bit of mixture of everything, then this is definitely the place to get it up close and personal to have a look. And the owners that run it are quite nice guys as well, and it's worth coming out.
Good on you, Corey. Great to talk to you, mate.
No worries, mate. I'll see you soon.
See you, mate. Bye. Look, Elizabeth's on the line. Morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Macca. How are you? Apart from anything else, I did French for 6 years and I loved it. It's been no avail to me, but I absolutely loved it.
Bonjour, Elizabeth. Bonjour.
Anyway, getting back to the subject, Darwin is absolutely glorious. It is just, we've had the best season, our mornings and afternoons. We get a few hot, sticky days, but as long as you have a cold shower and a swim and a bit of medicine, whatever.
But you've had a lot of rain, haven't you?
Yeah.
And that's the monsoon kicked in, and that's really great. It's good for the place. And just describe it. It's your Darwin. Tell us.
Well, it's not exactly that full on big blue monsoon, but we keep getting these beautiful gusty weathers come through. If you're trying to work and do things outside, it's probably not. But if you can just sit down and enjoy it, a night cliff foreshore, the waves and the absolutely glorious.
We should all be there. I've always thought, and I've never been there in the wet, but that Darwin, the north, is the wet season is the best time. Not only do you get all those lightning strikes and stuff like that, but the rain comes and cools things down.
It can be bad. It can still be bad, but just at present, this last week and few days, it's just glorious, glorious. Your mornings and afternoons.
The natural world is just the best, Elizabeth. As I said, I went to Bathurst the other day, and it was a hot as, you know, it was 40 degrees, and it was horrible. Well, not horrible, but you get out of the city, and the air smells different. There's a bit of dust in the air, but it's just beautiful. And then the sun went down, and you sit in that dying ember of is that twilight or yeah, sunset. Yeah, it's just it's just beautiful. I just sat there and it was still and just
enjoy it.
The natural world. So
it's just glorious.
Elizabeth, yeah, it's a bit late for me to come to Darwin for the monsoon. That'll go to what, March, will it?
Oh, dunno. God knows. The Bureau doesn't know. I said the Bureau's not in charge of the weather.
No. They just pretend they are.
Yeah, you look at it, you look at the thing, and then sometimes you wake up during the night and you think, oh, and then we had two nights with no rain and you're waiting for it to come again. And, I'm at the racetrack with the horses and that. So, but anyway, they had a fantastic meeting yesterday at Fanny Bay, so that was really good.
Oh, right. Yeah. And then the middle of the year, you've got the cup and all that
Carnival.
Sort of stuff.
Yeah. But anyway, just letting you know, everybody, is absolutely glorious.
All right. Good on you, Elizabeth. Great to talk to you.
Good on you, Macca. Great to have you back. See ya.
See ya. Bye. Blaze Aid have got camps all over the place because, you know, there's been fires and floods all over Australia, especially in Victoria. Gamalabee and Longwood and Yarrawee and Alexandra, Harcourt, Walwa, Bulio, Skipton, Natamuck. They'll be all camps needing thousands of volunteers. Nabiac in New South Wales and then Boddington in WA. There's a new camp opening soon in Claremont in Queensland after floods. They need a cook and an admin, please, there in Claremont. There's been heavy losses of livestock, about 44,000 cattle, cows, sheep and horses, pigs and chooks, and 400 rural homes. So these burnt out locals could do with a few smiling faces to help rebuild their fences, etc. You can volunteer Blaze Aid current basis. It's blazeaid.com.au, blazeaid.com.au. I'm going to go down and up and around when I can. I like doing that. I like meeting people and especially people who help and put in for the rest of us. Thank you very much. Christine Bailey says, sharks are hunters. So are we humans along with lions, tigers, bears and many other animals. Many humans eat meat, but a lot of us buy our meat so someone else kills it for us. If you're in the water, you're on the menu. Sharks don't race up the beach and grab you off your tail, says Christine in Hobart. Or as my friend used to say to me, June Barton, the lovely June, she'd say, the only shark that'll get me, I'll have a gravel rash. But Christine, I'll just say this, that humans, we're the kings of the jungle, and I don't mind sharks. They can have all the millions and millions of square miles of ocean, but at those places that are beaches, they need to be fenced off so we can have a swim. The sharks can have their whole lot. I'm not after sharks, but there's, you know, human beings are here for a good reason, to look after everybody else and to look after themselves. And the other thing that should be told is that you don't swim in unfenced waters. You're asking for trouble, whether you're in South Australia or Sydney Harbour or wherever you are, Port Phillip, you just don't do it. Eileen says, thoughts and prayers that you will grow in age, wisdom and grace in 2026 in Mount Gambier. What? Grow in age? Well, I suppose we all grow in age. Wisdom and grace. Well, that's to be hoped. Eileen, thank you very much. Michael Bugden says, best mango season for years at Terania Creek, 800-gram Kensington Pride mangoes, says Michael, and he sent a picture of one of those Kenzo Prides. They look lovely. G'day, this is Macca. Hello. He said hello.
Hello,
yep.
Oh, g'day, Macca. My name's Luke.
Couldn't you hear me, Luke? What was the deal there?
I wasn't sure whether it was me or not, to be honest. I've been waiting for a while and I've been listening, so I thought, hold on. It could be me. It could not be.
Anyway, where are you, Luke? Tell us the story.
Yeah. So I'm based in near Yark in northeast Victoria.
Where the bushfires grow.
Yeah, unfortunately, we've had the Longwood fire come down through from pretty much a Hume Highway and push its way all the way down across quite a vast amount of land. I own a pine plantation, part-time pine farmer that's unfortunately been completely burnt out. So I was overseas at the time. My neighbour I spoke to and he'd told me that he was there to fight the fire and a lot of them got out. He saved his house and did a great job, but I tell you what, I was pretty lucky because my pine plantation was burnt. So that's the bitter part. But the sweet was that you know, my dwelling and my sheds, and most of the stuff survived somehow.
Yeah. So what happens to your pine? Is that the end of the pine?
I reckon it is, Macca. I've got a few arborists that I'm in touch with, and they say once it burns, it burns. So
what do you do with that? You just cut it down and use it for firewood or something? What do you do?
Yeah, look, it's just going to have to be re-burnt, and I'll start fresh. I was about, you know, they were nearly at maturity. They were like 10 years old. So
wow.
Yeah, but that's – and it's tough because the East Coast has had a lot of burns over the last few years where our pine plantations have been, and that's why when you go to the hardware, the price of it's gone up twice the amount in the last few years.
Oh, wow.
But look, like I said, I'm one of the lucky ones, Mac. I've got mates and neighbours all around me that have lost everything, you know, from race cars and houses to the whole lot, some insured, some not. So, you know, it's in the bigger scheme of it, there's some people doing it real tough, and I'm not as bad. You know, my retirement fund might take a hit, but I'm in a pretty good situation.
Why did you get into farming pines?
Oh, look, it's an easy way to farm, Macca. You don't have to get out there every day, but it just fell into it. The block that I bought was previously a pine plantation. I replanted it, and I enjoy the trees. I've got a lot of natives as well on this place too, on the other side of the valley.
Mm.
So it's been a long burn kind of farming enterprise. I own a business in Melbourne as well, which I work and live between both. So it's kind of like a good long term game, which is now back to the start.
Yeah, Victoria seems to cop it, don't they? There's bushfires everywhere, and I've got some emails here with people sending me pictures of the bushfire in their particular area around Newcastle, or in the west. Western Australia's had the bushfires, but Victoria seems to cop it, don't they? Maybe it's because it's smaller, closer settled, a lot more trees. I don't know what it is. And you get those when you get the 40-degree days and the big winds. That's the end of the section, really. You just got to make sure you've got a plan, really.
Yeah, and look, I think it's a combination of look, we don't do a lot of planned burns anymore. We've got the Great Dividing Range that runs down. I do a fair bit of time in the mountains out there hunting, and I see the extent of the dryness. So it is if you don't manage the land properly, and you know, I think our past people have probably burned a lot more, and they do it up in the northern states, and when the fires come through, because there's such high undergrowth, there's a lot of heat in them.
Yeah,
they spread quick. The grass was up to your waist in some sections as you drive along the roads, and it took a week of 40s, and boom, it's up, and you know, it's still going. I came back from Japan. I was over there skiing with my family, and one of the trees on my block, one of the big pines that had gone down, had still burning in the roots 10 days later. You know, so, yeah, just the heat that gets through in the undergrowth when it hasn't burned through, or when it hasn't been managed. So I think we probably need to look at the way we manage our state forests. We've had the Wanagatta burn, which has been a huge one. That's where the old station was, right through the Victorian High Country. God's Country, we call it, Macca, but it's going to get a refresh now.
Yeah. All right, Luke, good on you, mate.
Yeah, thanks, Macca. All the best to you.
Pleasure. Bye. I went to the Carnival Cups, a pacing event, on Friday afternoon. It was a hot day, about 40 degrees. But it's great to smell the air in the country, although it's very, very dry, horrible. They've been in drought. A lot of the dams are dry. Lots of kangaroos around the place. We are the land of droughts and flooding rains. Don't let anyone tell you any different, as you know, if you look around Australia. And I bumped in a lot of old friends. Dr. Ross, who's our correspondent here. Wendy Turnbull, who I've known for a long time. And Emma Turnbull, who is a driver and trainer. Emma Turnbull, it's a long time since I've seen you, Em. How's the trotting life going, the pacing life?
Yeah, not too bad. A few slow ones, and always could use a few faster ones, but no, not gone too bad.
I don't know, when I first met you, it must be at Harold Park, I think. You're only a young girl. And
it could even be longer, I reckon. That's showing out my age a bit.
Yeah, how long have you been driving?
Close to 30 years, I think.
Are you still enjoying driving? You're training too a bit, are you?
Yeah, training and driving, yeah, enjoy it. It's like anything. Some days you wonder why, but no, I am enjoying it.
And you travel a lot? Or?
Yeah, a little bit of travelling at the moment. That works out all right, but it is nicer to stay at home.
I suppose it was only natural that you start driving horses and training horses and stuff, mucking around horses?
Yeah, well, probably wasn't my first option, but I sort of just started and, you know, I loved it and I just kept going with it and I do like the horse, so, yeah, no, it works well for me.
Many more lady drivers now than there were when you started?
A lot more, yeah, a lot more. They're going really good too, the lady drivers. They're doing themselves very proud, and not just here in New South Wales, but all over Australia. They're going really good.
So, Wendy, if I wanted to buy a pacer, how much would a standard bred cost me?
Usually, to buy a going horse, New Zealand's the way to go. You know, they can vary from, you know, 10 to 100, but, you know, around the 40, you know, mark, but then of course you'd bring them over. Syndicates are a bit of the way now. A lot of people are getting syndicates together and doesn't cost as much and more affordable for a lot of people.
I've just finished reading again Bart Cumming's book, and he used to look at a horse and he'd like the length of stride and noble head or something like that, but you know, there was little point. He chose horses on that basis, and in New Zealand usually.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have their, you know, what they like in a horse or a yearling even, and what they don't like in a yearling, which works good because if everyone liked the same thing, they'd be very dear and the others would be very cheap. But yeah, so everyone's got their little bits of what they like, and you know, some are very successful with that and some are a bit of luck, but you never know.
And they say in the racing game everyone wants to breed a Melbourne Cup winner or a Melbourne Cup runner. Well, I suppose you're for the same for the Miracle Mile or the Inter Dominion or the Hunter Cup or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the big races is what you know, you dream of, and one day you just hope to have something good enough.
He's hoping. Good on you, Emma. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Leap to Fame won the Cranbourne Cup last night. It was a very exciting. I assume I wasn't there, but I heard a bit of it. G'day, this is Macca.
Yeah, g'day, Macca. It's Matt calling from beautiful Newcastle.
How are you, Matty?
Mate, not too good this morning. If you have asthma, stay indoors. There's a big bushfire that's been blowing for a couple of days up at Port Stephens at Oyster Cove.
Mm-hmm.
And another one started not far from the Newcastle University. The whole sky is just full of smoke and haze, and it absolutely stinks. And it's pretty warm in Newcastle already this morning. It's only 6 o'clock.
And how long's that those fires been burning, Matt?
Mate, the Oyster Cove one, I think this is this will be its third, possibly fourth day.
Yeah, I think we've smelt down the coast a bit. We've smelt the smoke from that.
Yeah, well, now there's another one that started at the Shortland Wetlands, which is an environmental place. Not far, it's in the suburb of Shortland, which is basically your first suburb you come to, or one of the first suburbs you hit when you come into Newcastle.
Have a look around Australia, Matt. It's amazing, isn't it? You know, we've had all the floods in Queensland, and if you're up there in Queensland, give us a ring and talk us through that. And then fires in Victoria, they've had, you know, heat waves. People say heat waves and heat waves, but they've had heat waves, you know, 10 days over 100, you know, 40-degree days and dry.
Yeah.
And I was just up at Bathurst the other day and it's dry. God help me, it's dry up there and they haven't had any rain. So, you know, this is another just one of those summers in Oz, mate.
I was in South Australia at beautiful Maslin Beach for Christmas and the New Year. On the 27th of December was my birthday. It was 38, 39 degrees. We went to Port Elliot down near Goolwa the next day and it had a wind chill factor of 11. So, and I was over there on holidays with thongs and board shorts.
So, Matt, you live in Newcastle proper, do you?
Yeah, mate, Waratah, but basically born and bred in the beautiful town of Narrabri.
All right. So this is just a watching this fire in Port Stephens is just being watched for the last, 4 days or so?
Don't quote me. I've just been down to Sydney. I'm not sure. I think this is its fourth day. But, the poor fire is because it is. It's so humid here too, and it's so hot already this morning. I've just been out. I'm going to go and try and walk the dog, but I don't think he'll be up for it either, and he's a kelpie.
I see people walking their dogs every morning, you know, and I think the dogs really – some dogs do, and I think some dogs would rather just stay there. Look, do we have to go for a walk?
Yeah, that's it. I just want to grow fat.
Yeah, well – dogs are fairly sedentary unless, you know, they have to chase something or whatever. But, yeah, they're all out there walking and the owners take them for a walk and they think, oh, I've got to take the dog for a walk. But maybe the dog, if the dog could speak, as Henry Lawson said in his, my dogs, he can do everything, but He can do anything but talk, and he wouldn't if he could. If dogs could only talk, their owners might get a surprise, I think. But no, look, I don't want to go for a walk. You go for a walk, and I'll look after the house, and when you come back, have a cup of tea.
Mate, I've got another couple of months looking after this cop. We've got some beautiful neighbours that are major house renovations. It was either me or a kennel. And he's too beautiful a dog. He's a beautiful purebred Kelpie, and he's just magnificent.
All right. Good on you, Matty. Great to talk to you, mate.
Have a great day, Macca. Good on you, mate. Welcome back.
Thanks very much. Good on you, mate. And Kevin Butler's on the line. Good morning, Kevin.
Oh, hello. It's Kevin.
How are you, Kevin, from Blazeaid?
Yes. How are you, Macca?
All right. I hope I haven't woken you up. I just thought...
No, that's good. I started at 5:30 with you, and then I dozed for a moment. No, but it's all good. I'm up and firing. As you've heard, Macca, we had terrible fires in Victoria.
Yeah.
And we've got about 11 bases now.
11?
There's 9 in Victoria. Along the Great Dividing Range, just north of the Great Dividing Range. So I'll quickly go through them. Gamalaby near Yay, and most people heard about the Longwood fires. About 320 houses lost there.
Mm.
And that was near Euroa, and that went right over to Alexandra. So there's another base at Alexandra. So we've got sort of both sides covered, but there's a lot of farms in between that have lost all their fencing. And then there's a lot of people might have heard of that 45 houses lost at Harcourt, just near Bendigo.
Yeah.
And we've got a base there at Bendigo, a place called Harcourt, only about 20 kilometres away from Bendigo, down to Skip in the Western District of Victoria. The fires really took hold one day, and that terrible January 9, and Skipton and Natamuck, another two bases. Now, some bases we've got 20 volunteers. I think Skipton we've got about 70 volunteers, but look, we've got thousands and thousands of kilometres.
You're going to need thousands and thousands of volunteers, aren't you?
We are, yeah.
And also in New South Wales. Whereabouts in New South Wales are you?
Yes, Nabiak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Nabiak had the floods, and then they had fires. So I think we've got a bit of a mixture of fires.
Yeah, exactly.
Nabiak. And then don't forget Western Australia, a place called Boddington, which is, so we've been there for about 3 weeks. They had a terrible fire over there as well.
And they had the big floods in Queensland around Claremont and stuff, didn't they?
That's right. So Claremont, we're opening a base there. I think it's on the showgrounds there in about 10 days. So we do need a cook.
They've really copped it up there, haven't they? They have.
Not into Julia Creek yet. Apparently the water's still hanging around there at Julia Creek and above.
What is it about Australia, Kevin? And I was thinking about Victoria. I remember my mum told me later on when she was a young girl, she went with her grandma down to Tasmania in 1939, and they came back and the boat pulled into Melbourne on the way back to New South Wales where they lived, and she said they could smell the bushfire. Now, it was that great bushfire in 1939 which was a bit like Black Saturday in lots of ways, except it wasn't nearly as populated. But Victoria always seems to... what is it about Victoria? You get these heat waves there, you know, the 40s and the winds, and bushfires seem part of the deal in Victoria, don't they?
Yeah. Mackie, you're right. I think in 1939, almost the whole state was on fire.
It was.
What I heard, there were just so many fires. But just getting around my farm, and my farm is just indicative of a lot of places, but the grass is just so dry. And we're just all on tender hooks. Like there was a big emergency went off yesterday, and we're around to the site within minutes with our farm fire units. But we just know that with the winds we have, whether they're a north wind or a south wind, the fire will run. And if it gets into heavily timbered country, it's going to be pretty hard to get out. So it's, we're not out of the woods yet.
No.
You might remember Black Saturday was February the 7th and Ash Wednesday was the 15th of February. And then you might remember the St. Patrick's Day fires down, and you and Lee came down to see us at Cobden. And that was March the 16th. Now, So we've got about 2 months of this, and as you said, Victoria is tinder dry, and you may have heard of the Otway fires. Gellibrand, those poor people down there have been on tenter hooks for, I think it was 10 days. I think they might have it more in control now with containment lines, but and it sort of went towards Colac. Now, Colac is sort of a dairy farming area and renowned for being green. Now, these forests are drying out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, Ron, I was just in Bathurst the other day and it's dry. Dams are drying up there. You know, there's a lot of dry dams and the cost of feed and all that sort of stuff. We're going to come for the weather, for the news very shortly. But look, I'll keep mentioning these. You'll need, and will I get them to ring you or go to blazeaid.com or what's the story?
Yeah, blazeaid.com is one. But the best thing to do is just Google Blazeaid current bases and then up will come all the camps. And then you just ring the coordinator and just say, look, I'm coming on X date and I'm going to bring my van or a tent or a swag, and I can do this, I can do that. I'm going to stay for how long, and away we go.
All right.
And we need volunteers.
And I'll come down. You let me know where we can come down, and we'll come down and say good day to the people.
Oh, look, any time, Macca, and we'll be there. But talking about dams,
quick.
I'm pumping water at the moment.
All right, mate.
Dam.
Good on you.
Good on you.
Bye. Ray's in Hay. Good morning, Ray.
Yeah, good morning, Macca. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate.
Yeah. No, just say I'm in Hay at the moment. We drove from Sydney yesterday through to Hay on our way back home to Aldgate in South Australia, just near Adelaide.
Mm.
And Narrandera to Hay was pretty well 45 degrees all the way.
Don't you feel sorry for cars? I think, isn't it amazing? They seem to plod along and they get there. And I think, wow. And you're inside and usually you turn your air conditioning on or something like that.
Oh, we had the air conditioning on all the way, which made it far more pleasant, but you could still feel the heat coming through the windscreen and the side windows, etc. But, I don't mind it so much. We're on it's around about, I'd say 20 degrees here at the moment. So it has cooled down, and I think it's going to be about 20 when we get home to Aldgate, so a little bit of a change.
Oh, it's nice, isn't it? Yeah, it's nice to get a bit cool weather, but yeah, you feel for people in Alice Springs, but I suppose they're used to it. But you know, it's about 40 every day when you look at the weather in the Alice and the Territory and parts of Western Australia and stuff like that. But you know, it's like that for sometimes it's like that for months and months, you know, so you get used to it. But they live in air conditioning, you have to,
yes, that's right. And I'm just standing at the door of the motel here and just watching a kite float around the sky. A little bit overcast and it's just using the thermal out there and lovely to watch.
It's nice to be on the road, right? Especially if it's not too hot. You'll have a nice trip back home. Good on you, mate.
Thanks, mate.
Okay, see ya. Bye. Ron's near Euroa. G'day, Ron.
Yeah, g'day, Macca. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, mate.
I just thought I'd have a quick chat about a place called Herring Island that's in the Yarra, down almost in the CBD in Melbourne.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if you know about it, but I've spoken to a lot of other people and been talking about the sculpture exhibition on at the moment. And when I've said it's on Herring Island, they go, oh, where's Herring Island? And a lot of people are amazed to realise that it's almost in the CBD. It's quite a big thing.
And you can obviously get there. There's a bridge to it, is there, or something?
Yeah. So Parks Victoria run a ferry from Como Landing. I forget the name of the street. But anyway, they run a ferry. It only goes about 40 metres across the waterway and then goes to a landing on the island and they ferry people backwards and forwards. There's barbecues on the island and up the northern end of the island, Parks have a building up there which they use as an art gallery and other organisations use it for exhibition.
Ronnie, tell me this for a start. How big's this Herring Island? It's in the middle of the Yarra, right?
Yeah, mate, yeah. It's quite big. It's got a bush walk all the way around.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people just don't know it's there. I think it's amazing. I've exhibited there myself in the last 2 years.
So you're a sculptor?
Yeah, mate, yeah.
What's your muse, Ron? What do you do? What sort of...
Well, if you look up grass trees on Facebook, you know, or I use a lot of recycled stuff.
Yeah, and you make grass trees out of what, mate?
Barbed wire trunks, and I've had a couple in the last Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show. But this year I won't be having one of those. I'll have something else. But yeah, I use a bit of farm machinery leftovers. Yeah.
I'll have to have a look at that. And I assume Herring Island back in some other time was frequented by herrings. It'd have to be, wouldn't it?
I don't know what the history of the island is as far as its naming is concerned, but in this gallery they've got a bit of a history room where it gives you more detail of the island itself. And there's a sculpture exhibition on there at the moment, run by the Association of Sculptors Victoria.
And my producer, Lee Kelly, just said to me, she said, wouldn't you like some herrings on toast this morning? Here, we haven't had breakfast. Huh?
Yeah. So they've gone toast, I think.
I haven't. Look, I haven't heard of Herring Island. I haven't been to Herring Island. I'll have to have a look for it. And there's an art gallery there, is there? Just permanent.
On the northern end. It's quite a nice little building. And I think there's... the Association of Sculptors have got about 40-odd pieces in there today. It's the last day of the exhibition, so we'll be packing up tonight and tomorrow morning. So if anybody who hasn't heard about Herring Island, if they look it up on the internet, I suppose, and find their way to Como Landing, they can come over and have a look-see.
Ronnie, how long have you been sculpting?
Since just before I retired. And then.
What did you do for a gig?
So my last gig was actually as an auditor for one of the power companies down in Melbourne. But before that, for 40-odd years, I was a linesman doing power line work. So,
And there was a sculptor inside waiting to get out, Ron?
Yeah, or something like that. I like mucking around with metal because I figure that, you know, if you cut a bit off too far, you can weld a bit back on and go again. But and a lot of people reckon I'm a good welder, but I'm not. I'm a good grinder because I grind off my mistakes.
Ronnie, so we could look you up on the net, can we, and see what
if you want a web address, I can give it to you.
Yeah, go for it.
ronahl.com.au.
Okay, I'll have a look. I love the grass trees.
Yeah, you'll find a couple of good ones on the web page.
Yeah, I've got them in my garden. I just love them. I think they're the great Australian, plant, tree, whatever you like to call them. I love them.
I only ever wanted to build a couple of them, but they ended up being so popular. I think I'm up to 17 or 18 by now.
All right. Good on you, Ron. Great to talk, mate.
Yeah, and you, mate.
Herring Island. See, we've discovered something this morning, Herring Island. And Lee's just going out now to get a can you still get tins of herrings? I remember we used to have them when we were kids.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, herrings and kippers and all that. Kippers are a bit on the nose, but herrings not bad.
But, there must have been little herrings in the Yarra at that time when they said, oh, that's Herring Island, there's herrings all over there. We go fishing to herring. It's interesting.
I don't know if it relates to herring as for the fish, whether it's a person's name or something. I can't remember. I'll have a good read of the history to get back to you today.
Something's a bit fishy about that, Ronnie. Good on you. See you, mate. There you go. I hope you enjoyed our highlights package. If you want the full Monty, listen in every Sunday morning from 5:30 till 10 and tune into Australia. If you see me on the road, stop and say g'day. Contact me at macatracks@gmail.com. Talk to you Sunday.